shot 19 times. The police fired 41 shots combined. Mistaken identity, they had to admit it. When they went to trial, all four officers got acquitted. Ahmaud Arbery, his skin made him a target. Two racist white men shot him while he was jogging. Betty Jones was inside of her house the day after Christmas when shots rang out. A bullet traveled inside of her home and slaughtered her. No charges were filed against the officer. Cornelius Brown, cops chose to kill. They shot him 7 times, he was mentally ill. Dominic Fuller was murdered against stranger. They say he had a gun, all he had was a stapler. Eric Garner, he was a father, but now a martyr, ain't deserve to be slaughtered. His last words, I can't breathe, moment of silence. The officer who killed him didn't even get indicted. Emmett Till, 14 years old. They claim he flirted with a white woman. How cold. They took off his clothes, called him a nigger, lynched him and threw him in the Tallahassee River. Freddie Gray had his spinal cord severed, killed in a police van after arrested. 6 officers got charged, this is ridiculous. 2 years, 4 trials, no convictions. George Floyd, 3 officers nailed on him. He told them he couldn't breathe, they didn't care for him. The country rioting everywhere for him. Fuck those cops, I have no fear for him. Hector Morwan, he was unarmed. The cops shot him dead, he cried for his mom. India Kaga, Navy vet. The passenger in the vehicle was a suspect. A baby in the back seat, the cops started shooting. The officers were cleared of criminal wrongdoing. Jamal Clark, restraint wasn't enough. They shot him in his head while he was in handcuffs. Hal Coppin was mentally ill, but they say he had a gun. All he had was a hairbrush. The cops shot him, a king with the coroner. No charges were filed against the officer. Laquan McDonald was jaywalking. They shot him to the ground, murdered without a warning. Alleged that he pulled the knife and tried to rush him. The video proved they lied. How disgusting. Mike Brown, the suburbs of Ferguson. Allegedly a cop drove by, he had words with him. The officer shot him, he did nothing wrong. Why did he have to kill him? The man was unarmed. Nathaniel Pickett, rest heavenly. He was brutally murdered by a sheriff deputy. Oscar Grant, the world knows his name. He was traveling, the cops grabbed him off the train, placed him on his knees, laid him on his chest, then shot him in his back. May he peacefully rest. Philando Castile, traffic stop. He was legally strapped, he informed the cop. The officer got nervous, a murder was committed. Charged with manslaughter, but he got acquitted. Quintonio LeGrand called the cops 3 different times before he got shot. Allegedly, they say he charged at him with a bat, but since he made the call, it's hard to believe that. Rodney King, they beat him with billy clubs. They blame us, but the cops are really thugs. The verdict was not guilty. How shifty. That sparked the worst riot scene since the 60s. Sandra Bland, traffic stop. The racial profiling of us has to stop. 3 days later, she was hanging in the cell. They ruled it a suicide. The truth shall prevail. Terrence Franklin was cornered in the basement. He tried to surrender, got executed by hatred. The U stands for the unknown who died by racism. Their faces weren't shown. Victor LaRussa, they thought he had one, but after they killed him, they never found the gun. Walter Scott, the world loves you. The cop said he feared for his life in the scuffle. The video proved he lied, revealed facts. He ran for his life, 8 shots in his back. Xavier Robey was riding his bike. Point blank range, they shot him and took his life. Yusuf Hawkins was shot down in 1989 by some racist clowns. Jamel Crawford was chased to his death. Rammed into a wall, he took his last breath. Zimmerman, I know you think you got away with it, but everyone has karma, yours gonna be my favorite.
For African people, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God-goddess idea in the universe, by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization, and they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us so we would never forget. To those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve, and at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation too to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diasporas, both objects of a global myopia that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that described them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation too to them because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists, the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation. Those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation too to our children and those yet to be born. For they are the ones that you must teach. And you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity. But they will call your name in all eternity. To our children we pour libation. Ashe. Ashe. Ashe.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media. part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep and greetings, my sisters and brothers. Welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank. I am your host, William Rogers. Today we were invited Dr. Wesley Muhammad, the student minister for the Nation of Islam, very powerful brother, conversation that was going to be dynamic. And unfortunately, I have to say, was going to be. Just had gotten a call recently from Dr. Muhammad indicating that he was called into action to take care of some business that was necessary for him to do. So he had to cancel for today, unfortunately. And he is going to reschedule with us and come back on. We had planned a very dynamic conversation. So in the way things are and the way things do, we need to keep on. We have so much that we can discuss. So today I thought about we were going to talk a little bit about the roots of miseducation, the roots of miseducation, and where that comes from. So I hope that all of you who are online to hear him and to hear Dr. Muhammad, that you will stay with us. We appreciate that. We're going to have do this in a brief open forum. We have some very dynamic folk online now that I know who can talk about some of the problems with the roots of education, roots of miseducation, rather. And I think it's a very important topic for us to talk about because of some of the things that are happening. Our children going to school virtual. They're going to school under the winds of a very terrible and devastating disease. Parents don't know how to position. And the question becomes, what are they learning? And what are they going to be able to gather and garner from this to move on in the future of their lives? So I thought about that. I thought that would be a good discussion since Dr. Muhammad will not be with us again. And I pray that all is well and that he will join us and we will reschedule and bring him back on. We had him on about maybe a year ago, a year and a half ago. Very dynamic program, and he's looking forward to coming back and being with us. So again, thank all of you who are willing to stick around with us and talk. It definitely would not replace him, but at least we will have some conversation that we can share with each other on the roots of miseducation. And I thought maybe this would be, as you know, this is the African Liberation Month. I don't call it African History Month because African history is 365. 24/7. So we do kind of highlight this as a liberation activity, opportunity. You know, if schools were in action now, they would have programs that would highlight some of the accomplishments and goals of our people. A lot of times, many of your churches and religious institutions have Black History programs, and so they also do celebrate that. So we wanted to kind of look at talking about the man who was responsible for being able to know that we are going to need to do this in 2021. And that was the great Carter G. Woodson. Dr. Woodson, as you know, was very clearly at the helm of organizing this whole idea of celebration and so forth. And there's going to be a Zoom conference at the end of the month where we'll be doing, and we'll be talking about Dr. Woodson's work and looking at his miseducation of the Negro, which was still relevant today. And we want to talk about that a little bit. So that's kind of our agenda for today that we are going to do. One of the things that I wanted to also mention, I don't know how many of you might have seen a recent video that aired on HBO Max about Milwaukee, and it was dealing with growing up in Milwaukee, and it was done by a young sister, and she did a powerful cinematography job in capturing the images and doing it in a very professional way. But there are some issues and areas, obviously, of that we want to take a look at. We're not going to do that today, but that's going to be coming up. We want to take a review of that clipping of that film and talk a little bit about that as it relates to how we highlight the problem of our people and how we address that. And it's important sometimes that we have to look at that, because that's sometimes where the misnomer, the mistake is made in looking at what is the problem and how is the problem. And sometimes we, unfortunately, don't ask the right questions about the problem. And as a result, if we don't ask the right question, you can't expect the right answer. There's a guy that I've always liked over the years, some of his writings. And here's a quote that he had that I think is very relevant to what I've just said and what we want to kind of talk about today. He says that an error lurking in the roots of a system of thought does not become a truth simply by being evolved. An error lurking in the roots of a system of thought does not become a truth simply by being evolved. He says it remains an error. And if thought is consistent, that consistency can mean only a more intricate enmeshing in that error. Usually it requires a mistake in logic to produce a correct conclusion from false premises. But false conclusions can be drawn from false premises with strict logical accuracy. And I'm gonna give you an example of this quote, and it really fits right into what we're talking about today. But he's talking just in these first two paragraphs, he's talking about a lot of times we see something that you consider, and let's look at it this way. The African is not human. He does not belong to the Adamic family of man. Now that's an error. And that's obviously a mistake, a deliberate one, an attempt to do something and use something and pass that along to others to accomplish some other means, which was in this case slavery. So that mistake is not going to change just because of the time. So this was thought of in the 1400s, and it wasn't right, and we know that wasn't right. The idea that the African is not an animal, but is human, is not going to change based on time. And that's what this quote is in. He's not going to change based on time. And if we try to wait for it to do that, it's just going to get worse. And more is going to be added onto it. And it will never, ever become correct. So he goes on to say, in this way, integral and elaborate systems of thought can be unraveled, in which the rules of logical procedure are rigidly adhered to. But and yet, the entire system can be invalidated by an error at its base. So at the base of the American system was something called chattel slavery, which was not correct. Time will not correct that. Time has not corrected that. And how much we sit down and we try to hold conferences and we have meetings and we attempt to try to discuss this or discuss that, it's not going to change simply because of time. That's rooted in there. And everything that's done thereafter is going to be based on that error that's at the base of the American system. That's miseducation. Africans were not given the opportunity to learn in the way that they should learn for their own benefit. That's one of the major premises of the great Carter Woodson, about the whole idea of that we have to learn from ourselves, that we have to come to a conclusion based on our own knowing and our own life and our own work. And that's what he said. That wasn't available to the African in America due to the transatlantic slave system and the change that had been placed at the time. So the root of it, which was based on the justification that slavery was the right thing to do, that this is God's will, that this is what we're supposed to do, has carried on for hundreds and hundreds of years, and it has never changed, and it's never going to change in that kind of thinking. That's what's not going to get away. I don't care how many Tiger Woods, Henry Louis Gates, Cornel West, how many brilliant minds we create, that is never going to erase that that ugly statement, that ugly scar. Dr. Wade Noble said it best. He said, a people's indigenous culture anchors them to reality, and it must be the starting point for all learning. Hence, placing children or centering them within the historical setting is key to fostering educational excellence. A people's indigenous culture anchors them to reality, and it must be the starting point for all learning. Hence, placing children or centering them within the historical setting is key to fostering educational excellence. So when we are sending those babies into these public school systems, we're sending them into a system that was built on the premise that they can't learn. So how, going back to that quote that we look at then, so if that's the case, and you're into a system that says how they can learn, how are you going to correct that by having them sit there day after day after day being educated by people who believe that? Whether they admit it or not, it's embedded into their logic and their being. Teaching for many years at the University of Wisconsin, and the majority of the students in the classes that I took, even though we were Black history classes, were Europeans. If I had a class of 55, 60 students, 40 of them were Europeans. And I remember talking to some of them on occasion when they would come and want to talk one-on-one. And they would just come to share with me that they had never heard some of the things that we talked about, and they didn't realize that things were so bad and so forth and so on. And I remember this one young white girl said to me, she said, I understand why my daddy said what he said. And I said, what did he say? She said, he told me one time, he said, baby, just be glad that you're not black. I said, okay. And I said, what is it that you understand about that? Because of all the suffering that black people have had to go through. I said, well, it's not so much the suffering that corrects that. I said, it's the implementations of the suffering. It's who caused that. What is the reasons behind the causation? I said, that's what we haven't looked. You haven't looked at the cause and effect of what that was. And she said, well, that's kind of why I wanted to take this class, to see what that is. But that is what we face. One of the major problems to miseducation, one of the reasons why it's very difficult to erase just simply by creating a new curriculum or giving somebody some new test books or things like that. One of the problems is that poor education, those of you who are online, any movement of your telephone will create a distraction. So please mute your phone.
But that's what they're talking about tonight. That's why I call you, because I ain't got mine yet, but I plan to. But they got Dr. Wesley Muhammad on there tonight. I was supposed to got one Saturday.
Dr. Bridges, could you mute your phone, Dr. Bridges?
Okay, well, Dr. Wesley, give me a...
Okay, all right, so we are getting that. So when you come on sometimes on the line or the telephone, we hear whatever you're saying, and so a lot of times it has to be muted. So anyway, and that's Dr. Bridges, so I'm going to bring him on. He's going to talk a little bit about some of the same things I'm talking. So anyway, that root of that miseducation process is not going to be eradicated simply by creating a new curriculum or hiring black teachers or hiring principals. It'll help, but it's not going to do it, because the root of miseducation is also poverty. Living in poverty is one of the great risk factors. And poverty is not meaning that you are poor or unable to provide for yourself. Poverty is a system implemented on people for control. So it is the indicator. It is what creates a lot of times those things that prohibit individuals from learning. So if you're going to study educational reform and looking at that, you have to address poverty. And how do you have to address poverty? It's what Dr. Martin Luther King said. It will always be that way unless there's a radical redistribution of the wealth in America, and you know what that's going to be like to get that done. So I think the question becomes, it has to go back to the old days of learning when the African system. Asa Hilliard has written many books on the African educational system of learning and what that's like, and that's which obviously is a lot different, and the focus is a lot different to that. And so that yoke that we have been under for so long, the yoke has definitely not going to erase that error lurking at the base of the system. And I think that's one of the things that we wanted to look at. For those of you who have just joined us, you're listening to the Black Reality Think Tank. Our call-in number here is 215-490-9832. Those of you that are online now, I wanted to just remind you, as I indicated earlier, that unfortunately Dr. Wesley Muhammad had to cancel today's conversation due to the fact that he was called into action to do some things, and he had to respond to that, but he will be joining us on another day. We have planned for rescheduling. We're going to reschedule at the end of the week, and he's going to come still. So he is not going to be with you, and I really appreciate those of you who are still online and still with us, because we are going to talk energetically about some of the same things that we had planned to talk with him, and one of them was the roots of miseducation. So we'll kind of get a little preliminary thing to that, and we've got some very great and powerful brothers and sisters that are online right now that I see that can obviously aid and help us in terms of that discussion. So I'm asking you if you will stick with us and do that. We are prompted to by this discussion. Obviously, it's what we see going on now. I talked about a film that I watched last weekend called Growing Up in Milwaukee, and what that film said to me, that people are missing. And one of the things that I had a problem with is that it appears that a lot of times the ideology of educational improvement attempts to address the problems on the victim. And the victim is always the one that's being accused of the reason why they can't learn. And clearly it's based on a system that is rooted in the idea that you can't learn, and you can't learn because you are not intelligent. And that's what things like the bell curve and some of all of those crazy studies that were done over the years indicated, is that our brain function is not right, that we don't learn at the same level of all people. And that's embedded into American thought. That's embedded in there. It's embedded in everything that they do. It's embedded on Wall Street. It's embedded on Madison Avenue. It's embedded in all forms and facts of life. And you're not going to get it out by just letting time move on. It's going to have to be done by the people themselves, our community. We've got to do that. We've got to create a system of educating our children that does not highlight some of those kinds of images. And so that's kind of what we were talking about tonight, and look at how to do that. And obviously, we're going, when Dr. Muhammad comes with us, that's one of the areas that I definitely wanted him to address as well. I had asked Dr. Bridges to join me tonight as a co-host. Dr. Bridges, you there?
I'm here, but I don't have to co-host,
I'm not asking you to co-host. Stop running.
I'm here.
Don't run now.
I'm not running. I got somebody on my cell phone. I done called 7-8 people, telling them that okay. Dr. Muhammad is going to be talking about the COVID tonight.
Did you understand the announcement that I made? I did indicate that he called and he had an appointment that he had to make, that it was unexpected.
Oh, he can't. I missed that. He canceled out, huh?
No, he can't come tonight. We'll rescheduling him to come another night. So, right, I had.
Oh, man. Okay, because I called about 6 or 7 people. They wanted, because I want to hear about that COVID, you know.
Well, you know, we've got some people. I'm not going to say the duplicate Dr. Wesley Muhammad, but we can hold a discussion decent enough to deal
right.
with our people. And very clearly, I appreciate you for coming on and being here. We're talking about the roots of miseducation right now. That's kind of what this is.
You're talking about the roots of miseducation. That's good. I'm here, and I'm be with you, and I'm going to make some comments about that, too, because I did a Zoom call today about that. So that's
good.
I'm going to be with you, but glad you let me know, though, because I did call several people about Dr. Muhammad today.
Unfortunately, he's...
I know what you're saying. Yeah, you couldn't help that he canceled out. Okay,
right,
yeah.
Exactly. So anyway, we're going to still have a good conversation.
And, oh, we're going to have a good show. I'm still with you now.
Okay, all right. So anyway, brothers and sisters, that's the point that I think we look at in terms of this celebration that we do in February. We have an opportunity to highlight some of those principles and ideas, such as the one that I quoted with Wade Nobles and his idea of what our children have to be centered in. Dr. Carter Woodson said that unless he said that unless we are able to, unless a race has no history, he said, it has no worthwhile tradition. It becomes a negligible factor in the thought of the world, and it stands in danger of being exterminated. And that's the man that we said. He also said that unless African Americans receive an education befitting to their peculiar situation, they would never enter fully into the economic, political, and social institutions in the United States of America. He said the mere imparting of information is not education. And above all the effort must make a man think and do for himself. The program for the uplift of African American people from within to develop in themselves the power to do for himself. To educate African Americans, we must find out how to begin with him as he is and make him a better individual of the kind that he is. Now that is the learning of African people. That is the principles and ideas that we have to bring into effect. One of the things that I've always suggested on this program is to talk about looking at the weekend community schools. We call them Saturday schools, weekend schools, where we bring young people together as well as their parents, sometimes an adult, and we provide educational formats for them. We did that this summer here in Wisconsin. We had a group of 13 young people, and 4 of their parents attended a workshop, and we simply talked about Africa and what Africa was and its geographical understanding and some of the things that came. And those were the things and ideas that they had never, ever heard in their life. There was a high school student. There was a middle school student. Majority of the students were elementary grade, and they were understanding of what we were trying to say, but they had never heard those ideas. And very clearly the parents, and our encouragement to them is to continue doing that. Martin Luther King wrote something called The Purpose of Education. He said, education which stops with efficiency may prove the greatest menace to society. He says the most dangerous criminal may be the man gifted with reason but with no morals. And so a part of that educational system is obviously the teaching of morals, the teaching of our children of your greatness and who you are and how things to do that. The transatlantic slave trade yanked that. It took that out of the capabilities. It was an ugly ugly system, that we would see an entire different world if that system had not occurred. We have to call it what it is, and we now have to deprogram or attempt to deprogram from that system. There have been many, many of our scholars that have talked about the deprogramming process, how to get back our rightful mind, Dr. Bridges' book, how to recapture the African mind, how do you do that, what is the process for doing that, you know, and so many of those things, because, as I said again, slavery took everything in us. It took away our ability to even understand freedom and liberty. The document, that false document for us called the Declaration of Independence, had no meaning whatsoever for African people, none whatsoever. Frederick Douglass told you that in his 4th of July speech. He said, this doesn't talk about me. I don't want to celebrate something that, you know, my people were in captivity. And so when those kinds of ideas are thrown to us and thrown in our face, it really has no real meaning. I think, and I would argue that in terms of slavery, things like the auction block, they are symbols. And putting our people on this block to be sold like you would a cow, some animal, horse, is really a form of death. It is attempted to kill you as a human, to kill your human spirit, and once I kill your human spirit, then I'm able to capture and use you as property. And that's what the auction block did. The auction block was degrading, and it was designed to, you putting a human being up on a block and selling them based on their anatomical parts and their capabilities and things like that, and what you might see that would favor for you. And this was soul death, is what I call it. It was, and there are others who have called it as well. And then after you were purchased, another symbolic area that continues to kill your spirit is, now that I own you, so what I can do now is take a hot iron and brand your back or your buttocks or your thigh that declares you are my property. So in case you run, you will never, ever be able to get away because I own you. And this will go with you until the day you die. So even if you became freed, if you were left this system or left this particular plantation, you would always have that mark to remind you of who it is. I think one of the brilliant pieces of work in our culture that looked to that was the book written by Toni Morrison called Beloved. And there was a focus on those marks from slavery, the whip marks, the brands, and so even in the movie adaptation that was done of the book, there was always consistent times where they would rub those marks, and what they were doing was that memory that had been yanked from them and had instilled this memory of pain and oppression, they had to keep remembering. And as long as that's there, it's very hard to break from that. So that's why slavery was mental, it was physical, it was designed to be perpetual, and it was hereditary. And then on top of all of that, you were told that you were worthless, not human, stupid, inferior to everybody else. That is the roots of miseducation. So when Carter Woodson wrote that book, The Miseducation of the Negro, he wrote that in a time when there were a lot of individuals that were still living who had been a part of that system of captivity. And he had an opportunity to watch them and witness them. On one of our programs a couple weeks ago, we talked about Woodson and the fact that him working in a coal mine. He was a coal miner, and he had to work there with some guys and many of his brothers and sisters who were in that way. And he even talked about, Dr. Bridges told the story of when he would go into the coffee shop in his community, and he would have to read the paper to them because they didn't they couldn't read the English. They couldn't read English, and as a result of that, he would do that so that they would at least have an update of the news. That is all a part of the miseducation process. The children coming up see that. They are embedded into a system where they know that those are the kinds of things that are very devastating for them. And then taking that even further and going even further, you would be reminded, the Africans would be reminded every day, even though they accomplished many wonderful things in terms of survival for themselves, they still would be faced on a day-to-day basis with this image that would always tell them that you're not going to make it, and that you will always have to struggle, you will always have to cut corners, and you will always have to do things in a way that maybe no one else would have to do. And so that still carries on into what we call that post-traumatic syndrome, slave syndrome, that PTSS, that creates that trauma, that dehumanization of Africans is the source of that initial trauma. A lot of us still carry that trauma right now to this day in 2021. That trauma is still a part of our lives. You see it every day, sometimes in our communities. And so the catch is we must break this, but it has to be broken by working together, which is why I appreciate Marlena Karenga's Kwanzaa principles and what he was talking about in terms of those seven principles and using those as a way of breaking that system, learning about who your people are. But there's so many things embedded, so many little small things that are embedded in there that keep messing with us, that keep doing this. And I think about it a lot. And one of the big ones is that colorism problem that we have within our community, with each other, even within families. That's very devastating, that light-skinned, dark-skinned thing that has plagued us over the years and still plagues us today. And now how, you know, in some cases, our women are being used in a lot of ways as a tool. That's being used as a tool in terms of how things are being done in terms of what we, our families. Because obviously the basis of changing the miseducation system is the family, and being able to use the family as a source of doing that. The Black Church was one of the major institutions at one time for doing that. That is one of the great moments, but it's the Black Church as an institution that I'm talking about. It's the Black Church that fed people. It's the Black Church that grew crops, had co-op programs, gave clothing, taught families how to do different things. It's that part of the Black Church that's very critical and that was most helpful. It was that Black Church that participated in the Underground Railroad. It was the Black Church that talked about standing up, fighting back. The Black Church of Nat Turner and Denmark Basie, those are the systems that we are looking at. So if we are going to change the miseducation system, my brothers and sisters, we're going to have to come up with a new paradigm, because we're not going to be able to expect the, you know, our families, we're not going to be able to expect the system to do it. The New York public school system, Milwaukee public school system, Atlanta public school system, that's not going to do it. You know, we know the deal, the prison, the pipeline story. We know where that is and what that is. That's real. And we see it. And we must do that. And then where the attempt to try to think that you get away, these things like this, police situations and some of these shootings and killings remind us that you're not going to change like that. That's not the way it's going to change. So when we come together, the ballot box may be important, but that's not the answer. That is not the answer, I think. And I'm open to to discuss that with you. And if you think I'm wrong, then tell me. And then tell me what you think is the right way to go at it. But things like the ballot box, the public school system, putting our children in the hands of those folks that care nothing about them and who are coming to the table already thinking that they got a problem, that's not going to help. Not at all. Lighting candles may be a wonderful symbolism in the death of our people, but that's not going to stop it at all. I think, and again, I'm open to take the criticism if you think I'm wrong. Let's talk about it. And so that's what we're going to do today. And I'm going to start off with my brother Timothy. I told him I was going to grab him first when Brother Wesley Bahama was on, see what he thinks about that whole history of the miseducation process. Brother Timothy, are you there?
Yes, I am, sir.
Okay.
And
am I right or wrong?
Okay, listen. Brother, you're all right. I'm going to say, Brother Wesley couldn't make it, but guess what? We're going to talk about something that's just as good. And when he comes back, we're going to talk about it again.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, yeah. Listen. Every time, man, it's always good. I'm going to say this, Dr. Rogers, that it starts at home. And what people do in their home is important. You come to my house, you'll see a lot of black art. You know where I'm coming from. I come to your home probably saying, Dr. Bridges saying, all the brothers and sisters that come on this radio program probably saying. Mm-hmm. See, but everybody don't start with education at home. See, and I'm going to say this, that I'm starting there with home. You might not get what you're supposed to get in the public school system, but I'm going to say this. That a great man came from my Lincoln University. That was Gil Sodheron. He had a book called The Nigger Factory. Mm-hmm. So he was at Lincoln, and he saw people came out of elementary school and high school, and they wound up at Lincoln. They came from all around the country to Lincoln University. And he wrote that book because he saw himself that they didn't have the African mind.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote about it.
Right.
Now, and having Dr. Rogers... an African mind. See, everybody don't think like me, you, and Dr. Bridges, everybody on a radio program. You know, that's how it is. You have somebody in different places, they were raised differently. But you at least want them to have knowledge of self.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Rogers, a well-trained mind, can't be tricked. That was our last conversation, how a person who has the root of who he and she is should not be tricked. That's important. Because if you've been tricked once, you could be tricked again. So how do we get people that think that are black consciousness, how do we keep them there? Well, how do we get them there? See, Dr. Bruce Bitters says, how to his book is Regaining Your African Mind. You see that title, something like that. That thing is important. You know what I'm saying? It's important because that's your future. That's where you're going. That's your. In other words, which direction that you're going in?
Right.
What you had and what.
Right. Exactly right. And very clearly, that's the message that we continually are getting from our brilliant minds, the Wesley Muhammad, the Minister Louis Farrakhan, the high-thinking nationalist brothers and sisters, Marimba Ani, and some of the others who talk, they're saying that we have to reverse the process to restore ourselves to true self-image. We got to forget about all them images on TV and all that mess you see and all that junk you see on TV. We got to look into the past, look in that water like... the Lion King told me, look in there and see what you see. Look in that water. Who you see? And stop believing the story that the future is linked to the past always. It is, but it's not like that. And
that's true. Dr. Rogers,
yes,
I'm going to say this. That guess what? Some people are not going to be with us. Have that in your mind. Some people that are going to come along with us. Some people we will be able to bring them along. And some of us are just not going to make it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I know that. Yeah, you're right. Dr. Bridges, and one of the books that Asa Hilliard wrote, he talked about some of the things that describe the impact of slavery. Because, for instance, if you're going to work on a curriculum to bring our people out of all of this, and like you did in your book, and bringing your book, he says that we got to recognize five things. One is that the slavery created a genetic low self-esteem. It created where we weren't proud of ourselves. It created where we felt helpless. So it was a genetic low self-esteem. Number two, it created cultural confusion within our people. That whole system of having you crammed down in the hold of that ship, traveling for 3-4 months across a body of water, hearing languages and talk, it created cultural confusion. And then he said it created cultural misalignment. We thought we wanted to have long hair like white folks, so we went out and got our hair dyed. We go to the optometrist and get some blue lenses to put in our eyes to make our eyes blue. We do some of the stuff like that. So he said there's a misalignment of culture. And then there's self-hatred. We hate ourselves, so I'm going to hate you too. You know, and some of the horrible things that our young people do to each other, you know, walk up to a car and pump 5 bullets in it because you said something to my woman. I'm going to kill you, Ed. You ain't S. I ain't shit, and you ain't going to be shit either. You know, that kind of self-hatred. And then spiritual indifference. He said that is the fifth area. So tell us, Dr. Bridges, based on what you talked about as recapturing that African mind, how do we fight those five monsters? Is there a way that we can skillfully look at that and determine what can we do to fight those monsters like that?
Well, let me look at one that you said. I'm familiar with all five of them from Ace's book.
Right.
But just today, and this being African American History Month, just today I did a Zoom lecture, and I had told you about it a few weeks ago.
Right, exactly.
But I finally did today about the Black Wall Street in Durham, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And in that discussion, I talked about Black Wall Street. And while I was doing the research and doing my reading, I realized a couple of very important things. And you mentioned it when you mentioned, I think it was the third one of Asa Hilliard, when it said something. Well, long story short, one of our problems
cultural misalignment. Was it
cultural? Yeah, cultural misalignment, right.
Right, okay.
But one of our problems, too, is the fact that when we were on the plantations,
mm-hmm.
and Caucasian people robbed us totally of who we were. They took our names from us,
mm-hmm.
did not allow us to use our African names. Did not allow us to know our religion, as you mentioned, the fifth one, the religion, spirituality, didn't allow us to know our religion with an S on our religions, because we didn't have any one religion. We had several African religions. Names, religions, culture, and heritage. We knew none of that. So when you don't allow people to know who they are in any way, shape, form, or fashion, when you bring them to the plantations and whip them if they use their language, when you cut an arm off when they name their children an African name, and when you chastise them for following their own traditions as opposed to following traditions of the white Christian God,
mm-hmm.
when you do all these things of people from the beginning, when we first set foot on the plantations of America, then when you do this and other people see what happens to you when you name your child an African name, or when you worship the God you want to worship and you're chastised for that, when you are shown that everything that you do is negative, then that following generation of people on that plantation, knowing this, then they're going to give it up. They're going to stop using African names.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to use Naomi and Barbara Ann, and they're going to use Joseph and other names that they may have from the Bible, which was the only book that we were allowed to read in slavery, which is a historical fact.
Right.
So when you begin to, and then one of the main things, and to relate this to what I talked about today, and you and I have talked about it, when you begin to get rid of everything that you've known and to substitute your culture, your heritage, your religion, your language, your naming of your children, your traditions, substitute all of that from his culture, over time, it's going to be lost. Mm-hmm. I want to say it again. Over time, it's going to be lost. And one of the problems, and I'm relating this again to Black Haiti and also to the Black community in America in general, our only after they destroyed everything of ours, he became a model. He, meaning the white man, the slave master, his culture, his heritage, his history, mm-hmm. his folk ways, his mores, his models, his culture, his color, everything became our model. And when we deviated from his model, mm-hmm. we began to look at it as being negative. And what is generated from this, for example, when we looked at him and saw that you mentioned this earlier when I was listening to you in your commentary, when he mentioned color and his color was white, then everything that was not white or in total opposition to white or on the other end of the totem pole, which would have been black, then that becomes negative.
Right.
And so when that becomes negative in the black community, anybody who is not the color of the master, since he's the standard, then there's something wrong with that person or those people who don't fit that standard.
That's right.
And that's what has happened to us.
And that's where that colorism thing comes in, too.
Exactly. That's why I mentioned it, because I heard you mention it. I've been listening. Uh-huh. But I was talking to Tim when you put me on mute, and you're right. I'm glad you did, because I was talking to Tim McIver, telling him about the program. But that happened. And also, what therefore stems from that colorism in the black community, attached to colorism, also class comes from that. And I thought about that in my discussion today, because most of the well-to-do people in the African-American community in Durham, the Fitzgeralds, the Merks, the Moores, the Spaulding,
right.
they built homes, but they built those homes in the Victorian style.
Yes, they did.
Big sprawling houses with big porches and all that, because that's what they had seen. Not they themselves, but they had been passed down through generations. That's what we had seen on the plantations of America. Mm-hmm. So we began to imitate everything that Europeans gave us on the plantation. And the reason we began to imitate it is because we had nothing else to draw from, because all of our culture, traditions, models, standards, everything that we looked upon as being positive was destroyed. So you had nothing.
Right.
All you had to do was choose from his name book. You couldn't name a child Makeda, or you couldn't name a brother Lumumba. You had to name him Bob Rand,
yeah, right.
or Joanne, or Barbara May,
right.
or Patricia Ann, you see, because that's all you had.
Yeah.
So in eradicating, as you said, in eradicating this miseducation, we have to, first of all, understand what I just said, that we need to get rid of his standards, get rid of his models, get rid of what he has set up for us to follow, and mm-hmm. understand that we need to reach back into some things that we have done from the beginning.
Exactly.
Even though Black Wall Street, as I talked about today, I'm relating all this, in Haiti and Durham, and Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and mm-hmm. Black Wall Street in Boley, Oklahoma, and Black Wall Street in Jackson Street in Richmond, Virginia, and Black Wall Street in Birmingham, Alabama, the 4th Street District in Birmingham. It's still, even though we were trying to do it for ourselves because we had to, and that's another thing. Somebody asked me that question today. I spoke to about 800 people on Zoom, by the way. I'll tell you about it a little later.
Oh, wow.
But everything that we did We had to spend money among ourselves, and so we thrived, and we became financially independent. Mm-hmm. But it was still based upon the models that he had set up.
That's right.
And so, therefore, when they came to us with this whole idea of integration, we let go of what we were doing for ourselves because we really didn't want to do it anyway, but we had to do it because we couldn't go into his restaurant. We couldn't go into his hospitals. We couldn't go to his schools. So we had to look to self to do it. But if we had had a choice because of what he taught us on the plantation, our choice would have been to go to Duke.
Right.
To go to Carolina.
Yes, it would.
Go to MIT.
Yeah.
To go to UCLA. To go to Yale and Brown University, because these are the standards.
Right. Exactly.
I've really been thinking about this, Bill, as you can tell.
Yeah, I have too. I've been giving a lot of thought. You know, and even as you talk about the business development, and I'm by no means am I attacking the idea that we should not build businesses, but if it had not been for the Europeans' idea, the logic in their mind that we were inferior and that we were not at the level of whites, North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Company would not have been the largest corporation in Black America, because we could not buy life insurance from Metropolitan, New York Life, and all of those places, because they didn't want to cover our cost because of the fact that they said we're going to die young.
And but let me ask you a question.
That was out of the question. So North Carolina Mutual was able to sell policies. Right, and make millions of dollars because the rest of them wouldn't sell life insurance to us.
Exactly.
And you know also.
So we only do what we have to get away from the whole idea of reacting to a situation, which is what we were doing, reacting to our slave situation.
Yes, we are.
We have to get away from reacting and become proactive and doing what it is that we want to do.
Right.
And the hell with what white folks say we should do. Many years ago, and I'm going to be quiet like I always say, but many years ago, I used to look down upon the black minister or people like Elijah Muhammad or Yahweh Ben Yahweh. I looked down upon the black minister when he would call himself Reverend Dr. So-and-so-and-so. I would say to myself, well, how is he Reverend So-and-so? He hadn't, you know, can't hardly complete a sentence. But then I began to think about it. Why do we have to follow the standards that they have set for us?
Exactly.
It's what is the problem with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad saying he's the Honorable Elijah Muhammad? I used to think there was something wrong with that. But call yourself what you want to call yourself. Be what you want to be. And learn that we don't have to be what white people have taught us to be. And that is our problem. I really thought about this, as you can tell from my comments. I really gave this a lot of thought, because we talk about these black Wall Streets and these black communities throughout Durham, but they still were nothing but facsimiles or samples of what white people have given us.
Exactly.
We had nothing. Now, on a physical level, we came off the plantations of Stagville in Durham, came off the Cameron Plantation, off the Benahan Plantation in northern Durham. And when we came off those plantations, we had no money. We had no businesses. We had no houses. We had nothing but the clothes on our back. Mm-hmm. But not only were we wanting and deficient in those physical things, but we were also wanting and deficient in our mindset, in our thinking on a mental level, as well as our thinking on a physical level.
I
hope you understand what I'm saying here.
I'm just going to let you go to somebody. Very clearly.
One final comment. And when we were deficient in those other areas, as I mentioned too, when we were deficient in the areas of those physical things, what we did is begin to cooperate and organize and begin to build businesses and those kind of things, and start talking to white folks, begging money from Washington Duke and J.B. Duke and being Duke and trying to get money and build our businesses. So that's what we did in that respect. But by the same token, that's on the physical level or the material level. But by the same token, when it came to our mentality, we did the same thing. We went to schools that we had designed and set up, but those schools were still basically the same curriculum that white folk followed. You know, NCCU, with all due respect, I mean, I look at it like it is. It was a white school right. in the black community. Our churches had the white Jesus on the wall. We might have sang our spirituals, and we had to do that. But for the most part, our theology was a theology still based upon the theology that the European had given us, because we had nothing else to go on, because we had no access to reading materials. We had no access to libraries and investigation. So all we had to do was follow what they had given us. So what we did was just repeat what we had seen among white That's people, exactly right. and it has been negative for us ever since.
And see, that's what our ancestors was trying to tell us, because I recall Carter Woodson mentioned that about the black preacher. One of his scathing comments in his Miseducation of Negro is the black church, because he realizes that institution could have been a very valuable source, because it was independent and it was private. But he said, in the schools of theology, Negroes are taught the interpretation of the Bible worked out by those who have justified segregation and winked
exactly.
at the economic debasement of the Negro, at times almost to the point of starvation. You know, and then we brought that back into the pulpits of our churches. I'll never forget, I heard a preacher once at a church say that, you know, we got to pray more because, you know, we curse people. He said, you know, we were cursed by Ham.
And where did he get that from? Where did he get it from?
From the white teachings.
Exactly.
That's where he got it. So there's areas to do. You were saying something interesting about Durham and, you know, living and being raised in Durham as kids coming up. I remember we were always looking at, as you said, just like you said, standards of wealth, because we were surrounded by a community that was... supposedly, E. Franklin Frazier called it the home of the black bourgeois. And I remember one of the competitive things that we used to hear all the time in Durham is who was the best film home. And it went by who had the number of Cadillacs. And I remember, I think it was Ellis D. Jones. And what was the film home up there on Federal Street, almost right in front of Central? That was a big film home. He had big old brand new Cadillacs, always new Cadillacs.
Amy or Ray? Ray's film home or Amy?
Amy. And a lot of people said he was the biggest because he had more Cadillacs than anybody else. And
materialism.
Now, as kids, that's what we looking at. We looking at who got the biggest old big Cadillacs. You know, and that would tell who was obviously most successful. You know, and obviously.
And what were you looking at? What were you looking at? Hillside in the yearbook superlatives: best dressed, best looking, most studious, most likely to succeed. What was all that based upon? I'm going back now. I'm just making you. I'm just throwing that out on you. It was all based upon what we had been taught.
Light skinned, the majorettes. All the majorettes had to be light.
And that's exactly right.
You had to have light skinned majorettes. So that colorism. And so another thing that Woodson said, he said that the thought of the inferiority of the Negro is drilled into him in almost every class he enters and in almost every book he studies. And so if that's the case, reshaping the African mind has not happened in the work that we are trying to do, because you have to give them something else to look at, and we haven't done that. Your book very clearly should be required reading for any teacher coming out of a university that's planning to teach children. They should read that. They should have read that book first and able to do that, because very clearly you have to have a new mindset. There has to be a new paradigm in terms of this. Let me take a break. This we're at the top of the hour. I'm really enjoying this. Thank you so much, Dr. Bridges, and all of you wonderful people.
that are on that as I indicated, Dr. Muhammad had an emergency call that he had to respond to, but he is did talk with him, and he did say he will definitely come back, and we're going to reschedule for the end of this week and look at bringing him back on hopefully before the end of February. You know, February, they say, is they used to say all the time, is rent a brother month. So, you know, all the black folk that speak and do things, they're busy because everybody's calling them. And then in March, stuff slows down. You don't get the business like that. But anyway, he is he's very clearly committed to come back on. Beautiful brother. I really thank my good friend, Brother Charles Muhammad, for making that arrangement. So I know that I'm in good hands in terms of bringing him on. And we want to look at some of the other Nation brothers. One of our co-hosts of one of our other programs, Melanin Live, Brother Lance Jones, also works very closely with the Nation of Islam members, and he's also looking to bring on some additional folks as well. So we're going to take a quick break. Please don't go anywhere, because we want to open up the lines and give some more of our folks. I see Sister Yan is on, so Sister Yan, I'm coming to you right after we come back from the break. See what you think about the roots of this miseducation product that we are talking about. Okay, let's take a quick break.
What you're calling African history and Negro history are the missing pages of world history. Go study the history of your masters. Go study the history of the people who enslaved you and find out why they found it a necessity to remove an entire people from the respectful commentary of the history.
Silent, 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 silent night. Whenever the devil is disguised as God, he is called Santa Claus. Adventures in Negrosity. A Negro tried to cash himself for money at a bank. He got arrested as a counterfeit nickel. Culture. European Jews say the devil speaks perfect German. Black Americans, on the other hand, say he speaks pretty good English, too. Locomotive. The devil said he left heaven because there was too many niggas. That's why he started Europe. Geobolical. According to the devil, when he was first thrown out of heaven, he landed in England. I believe him. Heaven appeared with property, God with slavery. Heaven appeared with property, God with slavery. Before fortune was money. Finally, everything points to the people and things we understand. Understanding is a point of view. If you look, what looks down from that point? If it is the sun, okay. If you see it, better. If you don't, okay. But for instance, and there you go across the sea to be with the devil. The preparation for pain is minimal. For joy, a lifetime. The preparation for pain is minimal. For joy, a lifetime. Is that fair, we ask? Is that fair? You mean a fee? A circus? Or white people? The return of Lon Chaney. If you see a Negro with a white ring around his mouth, Goober dust will not help. Loku. Craziness is no act. Not to act is craziness. catch 27. The real problem is you don't know the real problem. Buddha asked Monk, if you were always right, would it be easier or more difficult living in the world? I knew you'd ask that, said Monk. Blue and invisible. Loku for Bush 2. The main thing wrong with you is you ain't in jail. Class gas for those who knows. Since the rich eat more than anybody else, it is reasonable to assume that they are more full of shit. In the funk world, if Elvis Presley is king, who is James Brown? God?
For an Awakening Media lineup. Monday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspective, with host Brother Oshi, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Same time, same place. Continued Monday lineup, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds, with host Brother Jihad Ahmed, 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central, host Dr. Mawia Kambom and Sister Nataki Kambom, 9 p.m. till 10 p.m., Conversation Reparations, first and third Mondays. On Tuesday, 8 p.m. till 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers. On Thursday, 7 p.m. till 9 p.m., Melanin Live with host Lance Jones, co-host Boniswa Ayan. Fridays, 8 p.m. till 10 p.m., Time for an Awakening, with creator of Time for an Awakening and host, Brother Elliot, co-hosted by Brother Richard. Saturday, 4 p.m. till 6 p.m., Black Sister Talk, with host Wanda Chambers. 7 p.m. till 9 p.m., The Elders of Sankofa. And Sunday, 7 p.m. till 9 p.m., Time for an Awakening, host Brother Elliot and co-host Brother Richard. Check us out.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Greetings, sisters and brothers. We are back. We are talking about the roots of miseducation. We were scheduled to have the great student minister of the Nation of Islam, Dr. Wesley Muhammad, but he had to be called away in an emergency, and he will be back with us sometime in the weeks coming up. I did speak with him, and I'm very sorry he wasn't able to join you, but I do thank all of you for sticking around and listening to our conversation. I have my very good friend and buddy, Dr. Bridges, on to help me. Brother Timothy, some of you that I want to be calling on now. We're talking about the roots of education, miseducation, and what that has done to our people, and how do we get out of this? What is it that we do? A lot have been proposed, but obviously somehow or the other we're not doing it, and so we need to sort of turn up that heat a little bit. We've been kind of highlighting the wisdom of the great Carter G. Woodson, who wrote that dynamic book, The Miseducation of the Negro. As long as some other great things Dr. Woodson did a very powerful historical analysis of the black church in America. The early 20th century church talked about some of those issues as well. And as well as the education, you know, system and why it was failing. And, you know, he focused and honed in on some of those ideas. And so we've been kind of looking at some of his quotes. You know, we have some very educated brothers and sisters in America. They've gone to some of the most prestigious universities of the world. As Dr. Bridges talked about it, the Yales, the Harvards, the Princetons, the Browns, the Morehouse, the Spelmans, you know, the A&Ts, the Green, the Bennett Colleges, the NCCUs. And they've there, but somehow or the other, we still haven't gleaned all that we need to get from that cadre of people. We haven't been able to bring them together to make this change. Woodson had a quote that definitely fits right into what we're talking about. He said, "The large majority of the Negroes who have put on the finishing touches of our best colleges are all but worthless in the development of their people." That's deep. All those Brown, Harvard graduates, African American, Yale, Princeton, Morehouse, Spelman, A&T, Duke University, all of those schools. Dr. Woodson said they have put on the finishing touches of our best colleges, but are worthless. Worthless. You know what I say, brothers and sisters? Worthless. This ain't me talking. It's called a Woodson. Worthless in the development of their people. So that's where we want to pick up on that conversation and get back into it. Sister Yan, how you doing, my sister?
Yes.
How you doing?
Season Black Power. I'm doing okay. How you doing, Doc?
Good, doing great. I'm doing good. Thank you so much for tuning in. You did understand I said Dr. Wesley will be with us in the next couple of weeks coming up.
I actually had a conversation with him, so yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, great.
Yes, yes, yes. And greetings, brother Dr. Bruce Bridges and everyone else. And I started to call you Doc, but I figured that you were, you know, pulling together something, an alternative. A backup, rather.
Yep, got to do the backup.
Yes, we talked about that. So, good conversation, good, as usual, you know, great. When you two great minds get together, we're guaranteed to have a great education.
Ooh, there ain't no secret.
Proper education, yes, yes, yes.
Thank you so much.
So, you know, I was thinking as I was listening to you all, that I was thinking about one of my favorite people, and that's the sister who wrote Incidents in the Life of a Slave Woman.
Oh, yeah.
Ms. Jacobs.
And she goes by two names, but Harriet Jacobs is what many people know her by, one of her pen names. And there's a portion in the book where she talks about slavery and how horrible and evil it is, mm-hmm. and how whites what we're teaching them in the church, wherever they let them sit on the floor, wherever the blacks, the Africans sat, teaching them about, you know, the goodness of God and the goodness of Christ and whatnot. And she was saying, paraphrasing, how can they talk like this when they treat, you know, the poor black slave so horribly, and would they treat the savages in Africa any better? And when I read that, she wrote the savages of Africa. They were taught that Africans were savage. And so I was thinking while you guys were talking, while your brothers were talking, of what kind of a real esteem can you have, or a sense of self can you have, when you literally think that you came from savages? That's what she said. And in some of my reading of some of the, you know, some writings from back, you know, the enslaved back during those times, they were taught that they came from savages. Mm-hmm. So how can you develop self-esteem, you know, in addition to the horrible treatment?
Yeah,
you know, so that's just a foundational issue that we're still carrying.
Right, and we're still dealing with it. Right. We're rooted in
that. Yeah. Listen to people. I mean, how many Africans I've spoken with who tell me that that grew up here, saying that their experience was that as they went through getting an education in schools, they were called African booty scratchers and all that other stuff. You know, so we're still carrying, the masses, I would say, are still carrying the idea and the belief that African is savage, wrong, ugly, every awful thing you can connect with being African. So that has to be changed. And we've got to do that. And a lot of people are doing so. What I would say is those that are doing, let's do our very best to really start teaching our people, because that's critical. If you don't have race esteem, then you're just not going to work for your people.
Right. That's right.
And you're sure not going to work for yourself. I was talking to you, I think it was last night, Doc, and the brother I was listening to last night was Dr. Leonard Jeffries. I couldn't remember his name.
Oh, right, okay, Dr. Jeffries, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he was really stressing, you know, in relation to what Dr. Bridges has written, what Bruce has written, is re-Africanizing the black mind. Mm-hmm. You know, so we have several terms. But, you know, in terms of what we do about what you brothers laid out, is re-Africanizing our minds. Because if you're ashamed, we're carrying a lot of shame, mm-hmm. as it relates to Africa. Mm-hmm. That has to be gotten rid of.
Yeah.
And then you stop copying your enemy, who's trying to get rid of you. You stop copying his evil ways, his twist ways, and embrace your own. So I just want to share a couple of things quickly that really stuck with me. Well, one thing that I already talk about, you know, always talk about internalized oppression and menticide and whatnot,
right.
But the term post-traumatic slavery syndrome, you know, one brother was saying that this is really not post, because we're still going through trauma in one form of slavery or the other. You know, so we got to teach our people that.
That's true.
We're still enslaved. We're not free.
Uh-huh.
And so the one term is a persistent trauma slavery syndrome.
Right.
That's appropriate. And he also talked about another thing that I talk about with internalized oppression is that we're the polar opposites of the European. We really are.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Jeffries talked about how we are communal, cooperative, and collective people. And the European is domination, destruction, and death. So the three C's and the three D's. And it just really stuck with me. So we are the three C's, communal, cooperation, and collective.
Right.
And they are destruction, domination, and death.
Mm-hmm.
So which are you going to choose? But we have to teach our people that, because, you know, when you're busy surviving for 400 years, trying to survive, the educational piece, you know, we just do what we're told.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the last piece to this, that's not all, you know, there's always been within our communities classism and a strong consciousness and then, you know, the slave-minded. And as I'm looking through some of my mother's books, and, you know, she had the books to educate us properly.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she just kind of put them in the house because the reading of them and the really internalizing the information was a stress. I'm looking at one now, the International Library of Negro Life and History. And I remember a black man coming to our house selling us this collection of books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they were about our history, and I opened up to just flipped open something that says Freedom's Journal, and you know all these black doctors, and you know, a lot of this stuff we did because we didn't want to be with them, even though we copied their ways. We didn't want to be near them.
That's right. That's right.
But now, you know, they're sucking us in. They're drawing us in. So we got to Africanize this mind so we can move away from the oppressive real savages. They called us savages. They're the real savages.
Right.
Move away from them. And I'll wrap up by saying, Ruth, when you said that we need to quarantine, that has just stuck in my mind. Quarantine ourselves so we can get our minds back.
I agree.
And then we won't have to be convinced to do anything. We'll do it naturally.
Good. Okay.
Right.
Thank you. I'm one of the brothers that I'm always so happy to have on the program is that Brother Greg Lewis. He's a... he has an organization where he has under his umbrella a collection of churches. And actually, Brother Lewis, being a minister himself, but he's also very conscious-minded about his people and his culture. And we talked earlier about the church and what it could have done or should have done, and it did not do that. It dropped the ball somewhere. And very clearly, we have had a lot of our great thinkers, you know, have always called the church to task by that. Very clearly, Carter Woodson did it in the Miseducation. W.B. Du Bois did it in his book and work. E. Franklin Frazier did it in terms of his work on the black church. And they were calling it out, and there's just so many issues involved. So, Reverend Lewis, I want to just ask you, looking at your conglomerate of churches that you have in your organization and under you, do you see any awareness of the fact that we have to get back our children's mind, that they are still being miseducated, that it's not going to change? I know you were pushing the ballot box issue, but even that's not going to change that system of things. Is there anything that we can look from the black church that we might be able to we can embrace? And I'm not trying to put you on the spot. You know, I know that you are a thinker and you think about things like that. Is anything going on that we might be able to give us a gleam of hope? Brother Lewis? Greg Lewis, I see you still online. Not sure, so maybe not. Maybe you're here. I'll wait and come back. Brother Timothy, you had a thought you wanted to add.
Yes, sir, Dr. Rogers. What you were talking about, sir, two people came to mind. That was two people who weren't educated in the system. Elijah Muhammad went to the second grade. Thought a man went to the eighth grade and could stand up to any lawyer and debate Malcolm X. Taught Louis Farrakhan. Taught Jeremiah Sabbath. Taught Muhammad Ali. And Marcus Garvey. It's something about those men that they weren't in the system that was in America. And you couldn't, they had that natural ability of learning. They weren't like Carter G. Woodson. They weren't like Du Bois. But what they had, you had to get from them. And what they had and the direction that they took you, the system was not going to be where they. They weren't going to teach you like Elijah Muhammad. They weren't going to teach you like Marcus Garvey. And I look at those brothers who taught me that came from out of prison, or the ones who after high school went to the military and came out, or the ones who were in the street or corners who were selling papers. Yes, a brother would be selling papers on the corner, drop wisdom on you. You'd be like, wow. That is what you need also. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It ain't always in these institutions. It's what's on the outside of it.
Gotcha.
That's an education also.
Right. And that definitely requires some introspection of that and looking at that as some type of a model. I agree with you. I agree with you, Brother Timothy. No doubt about it. Let me see who, Newbern, North Carolina, 252-474. Would you like to add to the conversation or are you just listening?
Hey, what's up, my brother?
Hey, now. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How you guys doing out there?
Doing great.
Okay. Hey, I'd like to expound on what the brother there was saying, because that's what the mass of our people really is. Mass of the black brothers are grassrooted. And I was having Dr. Bridges to do a lecture, part of a lecture series, that we were going to go back to ancient Egypt, which really, the title of what you were saying tonight, Dr. Rogers, was the misinformation and miseducation. Right. Well, really, the miseducation is we're not always, they're going to teach Carter G. Woodson and other brothers in school, but we need the miseducation form is we got to go back when quit saying Africa. Africa is a late name. Mm-hmm. Kemet mm-hmm. is where we really go back to the roots. Mm-hmm. Our grandparents would always say life is ABC 1, 2, 3. So let's go back to the foundation. Instead of saying Africa, let's start teaching Kemet. You know, right. Things like that, so to speak. Let's teach Sheikh Anta Diop. Let's teach Dr. Yes. John Henrik Clark. Mm-hmm. You know, things like that, brother, you know. And then our children learned that they were gods and goddesses during those days. And then those uplift us. So when we go to schools, they're not going to teach. When we get into fraternities and sororities, they teach Isis and Osiris. They don't hear about Bruce, help me out here. They don't teach about Osar and Aset. They don't get the foundation of where we our roots really are.
You got it.
Brothers and sisters, so that's the miseducation that they're not really getting. We got to give that to
we
them. They're not going
to
get
that.
It in school.
There we go.
They're not going to teach that at North Carolina Central, Princeton, Yale, and none of that. So we got to give it to them, brothers.
There you go. Now we're talking.
Right?
Okay. Now we're talking. Thank you, my brother.
Okay, my brothers.
Okay. Thank you. Brother Herbie White, how you doing, Brother Herbie?
I'm doing fine this evening, Dr. Rogers and everyone else on the show.
Yes, sir.
The first thing that we need to understand is that everything that the white man told us is a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that he told us is a lie.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing is you never respond to a lie. Because the only way that you can disprove a lie to say something ain't so that they said is so is to prove it to the satisfaction of the person that told a lie. Mm-hmm. I don't have to prove to you that I'm not ignorant. How can I prove that to a white man? He tell me, how do I prove to him that I'm not ignorant? I have to do the things that he tell me to do that makes him satisfied. Okay, if you do this, then you ain't ignorant.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So black people tell us when you go out, be a credit to your race. Well, how do you be a credit to your race? You have to do things that make white people comfortable and happy with you to be a credit to your race.
That's exactly
if they disapprove of you, then you ain't a credit. You messed up.
Mm-hmm.
So when you recognize that everything that the white person said is a lie and that you're not going to respond to it, that you're going to be an African and do what your African mind and your African heart tells you to do, and you're not going to worry about what these people are doing, then everything that you see that involves them looks different.
Mm.
I don't look at Harvard as a good education.
Mm, right on, brother.
I see things different. The attack on the Capitol a month ago, and they people charged in there to get to the people in the Capitol, the congressmen and the senators. Well, the people that was charging in there was attacking the people who write American foreign policy that kills millions of people.
That's Right.
Mm. But what we're looking at is, oh, ain't that a terrible thing? Look at what they did. These people was under attack. They were hiding it and everything. But if you understand that the whole thing is a lie.
Mm. That's right. Mm-hmm.
And think for yourself, like an African, with your African spirituality. Then you are on the road to becoming whole.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Thank you, Brother Herbie. Always. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. I've got Newark, New Jersey, 973-704. Comment? Question? Just listening? Okay. All right. Thank you so much for being on tonight and listening. Sister Dee Dee, you want to add something to the conversation?
Ooh-wee. What a great show. What a great show. And so much fire. So much fire.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, all of you all said so much great stuff. I mean, just great stuff. Need to stop following the Pepperwood. oh, my goodness. Just stop it. And all the... you dark-skinned, the light-skinned. I'm going to have a trophy, baby. Just stop all this garbage.
That's cute.
Oh, my. Just what a great show. Thank you so much, Dr. Rogers.
Thank
everyone that have called in.
Thank you so much.
So good to hear from everyone. So right. Good.
Thank you. 414-550. 414-550. You listening or want to add to the conversation? Okay, just listening. Thank you so much for being here. Got a New York City caller. I don't have a number, but last name Milford. I don't know if you're listening or would you like to make a comment?
How you doing, Dr. Rogers?
Oh, hey, how you doing? All right.
Yeah, forgive me last week for not responding to you. I must have stepped out for a minute.
Right, right.
Brother Herbie told me that you called on me, but I didn't get a response. Excuse me for that.
Yeah, thank you so much for listening and calling. Appreciate you. Yeah. Talking about the roots of miseducation for black folk.
Yeah, well, like I say, most of my sentiment has been already spoken about, but, you know, I think about things like they won't let Barry Bonds in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
The hell with their Hall of Fame. Let's put them in our Hall of Fame.
Right.
Their Academy Awards. Their Tony Awards. Anything that they feel at high, when they give it to us, we feel we've accomplished something. Who the hell are they to say that we should be in the Hall of Fame?
Right.
We should decide our people's fate, not them.
Not them. Right. Right. What do you think about the Negro Baseball League being put into the Major League Hall of Fame system. Do you think that's some advantage to that? Well, how do you see that? You had your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I don't think they're going to be honest about it. They're not going to put the true record that like Josh Gibson.
Right, right.
Hit over 900 home runs, you know. Are they going to put that in there? So I don't see it being any significance to us at all.
Excuse me, Dr. Clark. I mean, Dr. Rogers. White baseball players couldn't make it into the Black Baseball Players Hall of Fame.
They probably couldn't, exactly. That's exactly right, Brother Herbert. They wouldn't be able to get in there. They wouldn't. You're right. With somebody like a Satchel Paige, oh, man, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah. And that goes for all our Hall of Fames in sports, football, basketball. Yeah.
Boxing, the boxing,
definitely boxing. You know,
definitely can't get into that. Right. Okay. Thank
right.
you.
Right.
Yes, sir. Did you want to add something else?
No, I'm about finished.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Brother Lance. You want
to? Thank you for calling on.
Yes, sir. Brother Lance, you want to add to the conversation? Or you just listening?
Yeah, I thought I'd listen, but since you called, I'm doing a lot of critical thinking here. All this good information. actual facts. It's powerful, powerful, powerful.
Yeah, right.
I'm thinking, though, I've heard us carry the analysis all evening about the problem and the challenges. We have to talk about concrete solutions that are applicable to this time. How do you wed
mm-hmm.
the teachings of old that our ancestors that we know that work? How do you wed those two ideals? How do you wed those two lessons?
Right.
And keep it relevant up to for today.
Good point.
Yet root us in yesterday. And are we in our conversation about whites, because that seemed to be the predominant, you know, theme of the conversation about what they haven't done with it. Does that speak to a inability to really make a difference? Since we've carried the analysis, we know what's wrong. Mm-hmm. I think we mentioned it earlier in the conversation about while we know we're still ill-equipped to change it, or for some reason something's going on in the psyche, something's going on. We know the problem
right.
with our children. We know the problem that we have with each other. We know that we're not rooted in what our forefathers gave us. What we know is true. We know that, right? But yet we're not able, as a mass of people, as a group. Many of them think that this is the norm, that this world we live in, this America that we live in, is etched in stone, and this is it, this is the correct answer. They strive to fit within its structure, its systems. And they try to, in some way, we try to strive in this system. We try to thrive in this system.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Despite knowing that it's a system that does not work, is not developmental nor positive for us.
Right.
That's the hell of a dichotomy. That's the issue. To know that you're sick and want to get healed and be free enough to change it yourself. We on the line and all the blacks throughout America and all that are within our voice, we have the power to change it overnight among ourselves if we would just make the decision.
That's correct.
That tomorrow. So what is that gravitational pull that we can't break this American gravitation with all these things we've been taught, despite the history and what we've been through with these people? That's a bigger discussion. I was reading about Dr. Claude Anderson's book, A Powernomics, talked about what we need to do in education. So there's no right or wrong answer, in my opinion. Because we have great scholars, great universities in Africa. And I'm going to bring some of those folks onto our show.
Good.
But we have had a lot of great conversation, Dr. Rogers, as always, and thank you for allowing me just a few moments to share.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that. And we look forward to some of the things that you're going to do with Melanin Live as well, too. I'm excited about that. I really am. I'm looking forward to some of those good those moments. Dr. Bridges, you still there with us? Dr. Bridges, are you still there?
Right here, I had it on mute for a second. I'm still here.
Good. Well, Rick, we only got about 15 minutes or so. You want some closing thoughts as it relates to this roots of miseducation here? Some closing thoughts?
Not really. I wondered if any of my other people got in. Another 252 and a few more 919s. I don't know if they got through or not.
Some of them, yeah. There's some of them were on earlier.
Yeah, okay, they're not on. Okay.
Uh-huh. We got one 919-998. I think that's my sister. Do you care to say something, my sister, or you want to just listen?
Sorry, I am on mute. Let
me see. She thinks she's on mute.
No, we hear you. We can hear you loud.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for recognizing me. I am truly enjoying the show, and and everything that is being said. I just have been sitting here. There's a lot to think about. You know, especially when you are saying things about, you know, all the lies that have been told. And, you know, we talk about our African heritage. It's just a lot, because I think about that, and I think about even the division in Africa, our motherland, you know, and we're trying to pull it together here. So I am just wondering, and if, you know, I am just in my own private thoughts, because there's division everywhere. There's division in Africa. There's division in America. And, you know, we're doing a lot of talking and a lot of brainstorming. But my question would be, and they are all great ideas, but how do we pull all of this together and make it effective for our people in America?
Great. That's right. That's exactly right. And let me ask you this. You know, we've lost some of the means that we've had in the past to get people to send a message to our people. This is the black press is completely just about dead, completely all the way. Even some of the greater newspapers like the Chicago Defender, they're either online or something of that nature. And then this medium that we're using now is one that we are trying to sort of reinstitute some of those kind of things. What way would you say is best that we can do that, where we can reach sometimes the whole platform of our people? We need men, we need the women listening, we need our youth listening. How should we do that? Do you have any thoughts?
You know, that's exactly what I was thinking, and I will be thinking about how to do that. You know, how, what kind of formula or what kind of means would we need to be able to pull all this brainstorming together,
right,
and make some effective recommendations where we could reach out to our people and get the message out, because it's such good information. You know, and I have some young children and some young grandchildren, and I would love for them to hear this. So I am brainstorming right now.
Good.
Once I come up with some ideas, I will be glad to share them.
Please do. Yeah, let's do that, because I really do. We need to hear more from our sisters. I've always believed that the womb, we got to hear from the womb. And the womb's got to talk, and we've got to listen. You know, right now, even today, is on the line. We've got we've had as much as 27 people online, about 25, 27 people, and the majority of those have all been men. And there have been some sisters on, so we want to hear from you. You know, we're gonna bridge these gap. We wanna be the repairers of the breach. Then we gotta, everybody's gotta be at the table, you know, in terms of our community, our culture. So you're right. Okay. Yeah. Let's think about that. And ways we can do that. Okay. Dr. Bridges, you wanna? Yes. Did I hear somebody wanna say something?
Yes. I don't know if I can double dip. This is Sister Boniswa.
Right. Got about 5 minutes.
Okay. Quickly. I hear us say this a lot, you know, how are we going to pull this together, you know, what are the solutions that we can actually, you know, enact. And we say that in several different ways, and I know we're all thinking that, you know. But I think we're also forgetting that everything that we do is destroyed by white pathology. Everything. The Black Panthers, the Black Nationalist Movement, you know, it's in their government documents. We must destroy Black Nationalist movements.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They've got us labeled now as terrorists. So I want everybody just to hear, if we really want to enact some solutions, we simply have to have strategy sessions. We can organize, because we saw that happen during the voting the months leading up to the election, presidential election. We saw Black people organize like crazy. Mm-hmm. So we are capable of organizing. We can simply begin, those of us that are like-minded, an organizing process where we can have strategy sessions. It's really not that difficult. I think it's the willingness and the commitment to put boots on the ground and do this thing.
Right.
It can be done.
Exactly.
It really can be.
I
want to stress that.
Okay.
To address this issue of how we're going to get the word out. We got a lot of media, YouTube and all this other stuff. We can do it.
Right.
But who's committed? The question would be, who's committed to making sure we organize strategy sessions that reaches across the nation and then to the Pan-Africanist community?
Well, let's make a commitment to have a discussion on that one Tuesday night.
Yes, sir.
And how we
do
it.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's make sure we do that. Okay, Dr. Bridges, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of reiterate something Sister Beniswa said in terms of the slavery before I make a closing comment. I see 9:57. And she's right. Whenever you look at those slave narratives and writings of the slaves and ex-slaves in America, you do find that they were being taught quite negatively about our past and our traditions and our culture. And when she said it, she made me think about it, and I talk about it in my book. Phyllis Wheatley, who was considered to be the first black American poet who came to America during the Revolutionary Era, and was a stolen child, a slave of Mr. Wheatley up in Massachusetts. But she wrote a poem, and in that poem she says, 'Twas mercy that brought me from my native land. 'Twas mercy that brought me from my native land and made my benighted mind to understand. 'Twas mercy that brought me from my native land, meaning Africa, and made my benighted or darkened, ignorant mind to understand that there's a God and a heaven too. So in those words, you can see, pardon me?
I said George Washington taught her well.
Yeah, taught her quite well. She said it was mercy. And many of us in America today think that we're better off because we were brought to America by the slave master. When we look at the way Africa is today, because of Africa and the way that it is. So we think it was merciful. And she said, to make my benighted mind to understand. Meaning she had been taught that we were savages and ignorant and came from jungles and primitive societies. So all those writings show the same thing. But I go back to what Brother Bob Marley says in my closing thoughts. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery, for none but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, for none of them can stop the time.
Thank you so much.
Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery, because none but ourselves can free our minds.
Right on. Thank you. Brothers and sisters, we really appreciate you. I'm going to leave you with two thoughts as well. One is that I want you to remember this as we think about the roots of miseducation. Remember that an educator in a system of oppression is either a revolutionary or an oppressor. An educator in a system of oppression is either a revolutionary or an oppressor. And the final one is that the question of education for black people in America is a question of life and death. Thank you, brothers and sisters. We appreciate you. Really appreciate you, and we would definitely look forward to seeing you next week. Not sure if that's the week that Brother Muhammad is going to be with us, but it will be coming up, and I will keep you abreast. Have a very wonderful week, and I will see you next Tuesday evening at 7 p.m.
Well, Ezekiel saw the wheel of rolling, the great big wheel of turning over. Ezekiel saw the wheel of rolling, way in the middle of the air.
Great God.
Ezekiel saw the wheel of rolling, the great big wheel of turning over. Ezekiel saw the wheel of rolling, way in the middle of the air.
Well, great God Almighty, lively and glad.
His eagle saw the wheel in the middle of the air. Great big wheel and a little bit of wheel. A wheel turning over in the middle of the wheel. The good book says, and the book don't lie, God told Ezekiel to prophesy. Then my God spoke in Ezekiel's mind. He raised his voice and began to cry. He cried, all bones,
all songs of rock and great God, the mighty thing, your bones and heart. All bones, bones, won't you hear me now? All bones,
you hear the word of God.
Ezekiel's son, the wheel of rolling, the great big wheel of turning over. Ezekiel's son, the wheel of rolling, way in the middle of the air.
Great God.
Ezekiel's son, the wheel of rolling, the great big wheel of turning over. Ezekiel's son, the wheel of rolling, way in the middle of the air.
Well, God told Ezekiel to prophesy. Zeke tried to do it, and that's no lie. God sent the wind from the west and the east. Spirit struck him from his head to his feet. He cried, all bones,
all bones are walking great God,
almighty, all bones are dark.
All bones, bones, won't you hear me now? All bones,
hear the word of God.
Ezekiel's on the wheel of rolling, the great big wheel of turning over. Ezekiel's on the wheel of rolling, way in the middle of the air.
Well, old Ezekiel tried his best to do the thing the Lord had told him to.
He did his best, that's all he can.
After all, Zeke was a natural man.
Ezekiel saw the wheel of rolling, the great big wheel of turning over. Ezekiel saw the wheel of rolling, way in the middle of the air.
One more,
Ezekiel
one more.
Ezekiel saw the wheel of rolling,
Zeke.
The great big wheel of turning over.
Amen, Zeke.
Ezekiel saw the wheel of rolling,
yes.
Way in the middle of the air.
Yes, indeed. Old Zeke was wailing that time.